This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. Hello, Kathy.
Hello, Mel. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, you know what? I would rather you said that at the end of our conversation than at the beginning.
Well, I can say it at the end also. I can even say better things also at the end.
Okay, I'm going to allow you to do that. So everybody in the video audience, in the live streaming, in the YouTube, in the NBN podcast, I am here with a wonderful person, a wonderful author, and with a complicated name, Kathy Stefanik Ogren. Did I get it right?
You've got it.
And welcome to the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network, which I host. And I'm so happy to have you today, because today is your book birthday.
Yes.
So happy birthday to Pew.
Too bad I don't have balloons.
You should have brought cheese, actually. So now is a good time to wave your book around.
All right.
And to those of you who are in the podcast audience, and I hope there are thousands of you, run out and buy this book, because it's a stinkily wonderful book. About cheese and a really interesting slice of American history. Oy vey, we've started that already. Okay, so Kathy, run us through the book.
Run us through the book. Okay, all right. Well, if you haven't seen the title, it's the Pew. I mean, like Pew, the stinky and legendary gift from Colonel Thomas S. Meacham. And Thomas Meacham was a farmer in the state of upstate New York. And he decided, and this is in 1835, he wanted to make his community known, well known around the area and even further on. So he decided he was going to give a gift, a colossal gift, to the President of the United States. And his gift was a 1,400 pound cheese that he made. And it became a great big thing. They would take it. They had a parade. They put it on a schooner. They took it to down the Erie Canal and around about to Washington, D.C. and handed it over to the president. And it was left in the White House for the vestibule or the entryway of the White House for over a year. And it began to smell, because summers in Washington, D.C. happened to be very hot and humid, and there was no air conditioning back then. So it smelled. They decided they needed to get rid of it. The president had an open reception right before he left office. 10,000 people showed up, and in 2 hours, it was gone. And that is a story of Pew.
There's also he left behind a legacy, which is another 700-pound cheese.
That is true. And that's in the back matter. He did. Yeah. There was a surprise at the very end. And the new president did not know that there was another 700 pound cheese stored somewhere. And so the president, Martin Van Buren, actually had an auction, and gave it away at the at the auction.
So, Kathy, in your book, I thought that you wanted to be, what's the word, bipartisan, because you didn't mention the president who the cheese was for.
That is true.
So who was the cheese for?
It was
Now you can tell me.
It was for President Andrew Jackson. And I left it out because his, and this happened to be because some of the editors that had looked at it said he wasn't, his legacy was not a great legacy. And so after getting some rejections because of that, I decided that I would, I rewrote it because I did have references to Old Hickory, and the press was made from the hickory, a hickory tree, the cheese press. And I just left that out. And I thought if students or anyone who read it really wanted to know who the president was, that was a good way of, for them to do research on their own to find out who it was.
Oh, did he leave office willingly?
Oh, yes, he did leave office. He was basically very ill at the very end of
because
his.
I thought he left the 700-pound other cheese as a stinky parting gift for somebody he didn't like.
No, it was not. That was not on purpose, I just think. And I think, and I couldn't find in my research whether it was at the White House or stored someplace else, but obviously it was stored in a cooler place than the entryway of the White House.
I hope so. So a few words about the book, the publisher, the illustrator, your agent. Let's
Well, the publisher is Sleeping Bear Press. It's a small press, but they do beautiful books.
They're wonderful.
Yeah. I loved working with my editor, and my next book I'll be working with her also. Leslie Breen is the illustrator. She did a wonderful job, and anything that we did have to change a few things in it, and she was very willing to change. And we've been in contact with one another on email, and we're going to be doing a book signing together, and I'll get to meet her in person, which I'm excited about. And my agent is Vicky Salvaggio, and she is from the Storm Literary Agency, which is a great agency to be with.
And Vicky is wonderful. Send her, please, my regards.
Oh. And
ask her whether she wants to be on the show. I'd love to have her.
Oh, I should.
She's one of the most highly regarded, one of the nicest agents. And I am not going to tell you why today, but I'll tell you off camera. And I should disclose that we have known each other for a few months. So we're kind of writing buddies now, and that makes me even more delighted to be interviewing you. And Sleeping Bear Press is a wonderful press. And would you like to just open a double spread and show it the people who are watching how beautiful this book is?
Okay,
because the illustrations are like, you know, a throwback to the.
I'm going to show you. I love this illustration of the farm illustration at the very first, and. That was one that we had to change that a little bit because Leslie had it as a very hilly area, and the area where he lives actually was very flat. So here's another one. Oh, cheese.
Yeah, it's done so well. It's like colonial style.
Right. She did a wonderful job. And let me, there's just the one more.
There's the one with the people coming to the White House that I love in particular.
Coming. Okay. This one.
That one is lovely. There's another one where you see all the people in their get out. What's the word? Their fancy attire.
Oh, are they lined? Okay. Ooh.
Maybe the 10,000 people lined up to taste the cheese or to smell it as a. You could actually smell it before you could taste it.
Oh, here's some. Is it this one?
Yes. Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So Kathy, let's, before I ask you why write such a stinky story, but I must say that's part of what really I love about the book, as someone who spent 30 years smelling people. And I'm a microbiologist, and your book is all about microbiology, even though you don't mention the good bacteria and and molds and whatever that make the cheese. But I'm not going to hold that
against you.
Isn't
that the back matter a little bit? A little bit
of it? You talked about the bad bacteria. The cheese is a microbial process, which makes it wonderful and smelly and just right, ripe for a person like me. So let's go back to the very beginning of Kathy. Start from the beginning and don't leave out anything.
The beginning, like the day I was born?
Yeah, where you got your interesting names from and how you fell in love with the picture books and stuff like that.
Well, I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And being from Milwaukee or Wisconsin, you have to be a cheese lover, a cheese head, and a Green Bay Packer fan. So that's part of it. My parents were very good about having books around the house and going to the library all the time. And so that was part of it. When we lived in Milwaukee, we'd walk to the library. Then we moved to Lincoln, Illinois, because my dad was transferred there. And that's where I really grew up from the time I was in fourth grade until I went away to college. And that was the time I also started writing. I used to write plays for my parents, and we put them on for our parents. And my parents were very good about watching and the neighborhood. So we get together and some of the times I did it with in school too. And, you know, I just liked writing, and I did very well with writing in high school. My degree is in elementary education. So I've taught, and I wrote plays for the kids in school. I taught second and third grade. And over the years, I've taught for about 32 years altogether, but it was on and off because, again, we moved quite a bit. So I taught in Illinois, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. Those are some of the places. And we moved. Anyway, I've written, and I started writing for children's magazines, which they were not only for like Jack and Jill magazines, they were stories, but also educational magazines. Being a teacher, I had some ideas.
How did you break into that?
That was pretty easy to break into. Some of the magazines they're not being published anymore, like Instructor in early years. You could send an article to them, and if they liked it, they would publish it. Highlights magazines I've been published in also. Jack and Jill, there was another one I don't think they have it anymore. But anyway, that's where I really started. And then I decided I wanted to write a book, a children's book. And that was after my daughter was born. I had a little bit of time because I was a stay-at-home mom for a while. And so while she was sleeping, which wasn't very often, I would sit down and write with my typewriter. And eventually I had a book, early on I had a book published, and it was an early reader, and it was a big surprise. And it was very nice. It was also with a big house, which was very surprising to me.
Okay, a few words about your debut book.
This book?
Yeah. No, not this book. This book. The book you're talking about now.
Oh, the early reader. Okay. It was called Sly P.I. and the Case of the Missing Shoes. Oh. And when the editor actually called me on the telephone, we had a telephone with the cord and everything. I'm on the phone with her, and I was so surprised and so excited. And my daughter was outside with a friend. It was during the summer. The window was open. They had the hose out. And all of a sudden, she pointed it toward the kitchen window where I was. And she sprayed, water was spraying in the window while I'm trying to be very reserved, talking to this editor on the phone and trying to tell her stop. A Sly P.I. in the Case of the Missing Shoes was a fox and a ballerina who was a pig. and he's, of course, solves the problem of her missing ballet shoes. And after that, things happened again. And I've continued writing over the years, but It's been a long road. I had another early reader published, The Adventures of Archie Featherspoon, in 2002. And it's a tall tale back in the Old West. And he just was very creative, and he took care of the bully boys in an old Western town. So, and then after that, as I mentioned to Mel, I did retire from teaching, and I became a full-time writer, and I joined critique groups. When I first started, there were no critique groups. There were no, there were hardly any classes, and now there are classes. I mean, everywhere you look, there's a class to take. And you were kind of on your own to do it, so to do everything. So now it's been wonderful to be in critique groups and get to know different people and different styles, and just, as we say, honing your craft. So, and that's kind of me. And I live here with my husband, and I have a daughter and four grandchildren, and they love it. And they'll be here this weekend making a lot of noise.
That's so wonderful. Well, you know my theory, Kathy. My theory, which you're free to debunk, is that we write to the age group that we're stuck at. In other words, I write for my little five-year-old Melvin. Do you write for a little six-year-old Kathy?
No, because in my mind, I'm 26. And that's where I'm going to stay. But I love picture books, and I love, I guess maybe even though in my mind I'm 20, I think crazy things, and I have a crazy imagination. So that's where probably that's true.
Okay. So let's say now fast forward to the difficulty that we all have, that you overcame, which is finding an agent, because very often getting published requires having an agent. So how did you find the wonderful Vicky?
I actually, and this is good, and this is something that any potential writers should be doing too. I had Vivian Kirkfield does a 50 Precious Words contest. I did that. And I did, even while I was writing, I always, if I saw a contest, I would enter a contest. So I thought, well, this is a good contest. And the first place was an interview or a critique from Essie White, who's the head, along with Vicky, they kind of together at Storm Literary. But so, and that's actually how I ended up getting Vicky as my agent, because I came in first place, which I remember opening up my, it was my phone. I looked at my phone and looked at, you know, the winners, because I knew the day the winners were going. And it went, Kathy Ogren. I'm going, Kathy Ogren, that's me. I was totally surprised. So it was a nice surprise. And that's why you join contests or take advantage of contests.
Okay. So first of all, hundreds of people, many hundreds, join Vivian's 50 Precious Words. And you won. And I should say that Vivian is a wonderful lady. She's been on the show. She's a dear friend.
And, oh, she's fantastic. She is.
And because I don't have any chance of winning, I'm one of the people who give prizes. So I don't enter that anymore. So that's wonderful. First prize. I don't know if I've ever met somebody who won first prize in 50 Precious Words. You're my first.
Well, so, but wonderful. And then don't ask me what it was, because it is, right now I can't remember what it was. It was in 2018, I think, is the year I won it, because that's, I think, when I signed with Vicky.
Okay, so now here's my question. Despite your previous successes in having two fictional early readers, you've gone back to nonfiction.
Interestingly, I did. When I first wrote, first of all, I found out about this cheese when my husband was watching the 1,400-pound cheese. My husband was watching the History Channel, and I happened to hear the word cheese. So I sat down, I thought, oh my gosh, that is such a strange story. And I'm thinking, that could be a good picture book. And so I looked for, first of all, I looked online to see if anyone had written a picture book about a cheese, and there's only one, and it was actually written for a different president. So I decided I would write this. I did research, I researched it, found enough, and I thought, and I actually wrote a fiction picture book with a mouse as a narrator, who is a tour guide at the White House. And there are people, and there are like a little girl there, and the mouse and the little girl interact with one another. And it was a silly thing, but it had all of the nonfiction elements in it, but it was a book. It was a true fictional book. And editors didn't appear to like the mouse as a narrator. So I decided, okay, what can I do now? And I thought, well, why not try nonfiction? And I didn't want a biography, but it's all about the cheese and what happened to the cheese, who made it, what happened to it, where it went. And that's how the nonfiction came up.
So are you going back to fiction again? Is your next book with Sleeping Bear fiction or nonfiction? Can you say anything about it?
It's fiction. It's about a little red chair. It's very sweet.
And when will it be out?
In fall of 2024, next year.
Wonderful. So, Kathy, I keep saying this, and I'm going to say it to you. The people I interview on this show, the authors, are in the 1 in 1,000 club. Only 1 out of 1,000 children's book writers gets a publishing deal with a traditional publisher, and now you have another deal, and you've previously published, now it's time to share the wisdom of being that 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000. So first of all, hats off to you and congratulations. It's a wonderful book, and even though it's nonfiction, it's got a lot of puns and humor, and it's such a crazy, you know, we Jews would call it a Michigan story. It's such a crazy story about this weirdo guy that sends the president, you know, before the time of having the world's biggest cheese or whatever, a 1,400-pound, which is a 600-kilogram stinky cheese, by boat and by carriage, all the way from this farm
in upstate New York. Yeah,
upstate New York, somewhere near Albany or whatever, all the way to Washington, where it sits for a year in the middle of the White House. It's such a crazy story I could have gone for it. I like, maybe you're making the whole thing up. Now's the time to come clean. Is this a true
story?
Actually,
someone did ask me if it was true, if it was a true story. Yes, of course it is a true story. I'm not making it up. I mean, I have my research here but I added humor because I personally like using humor and I like puns when they're appropriate. This story basically lent itself to some of the puns that were in there. So
but that was the name of the book, you know, the legendary. Oy vey, that what a pun in the title. Well done. So Kathy, with the, I'm sure this, and this book launches today.
Yes.
And everybody run out and buy it because it's cute. It's funny. The illustrations are marvelous. And it's also as nonfiction, it's also you have a lot of back matter on how cheese is made, and the story itself is hilarious. And that's wonderful. Today's the day that the book launches.
Right. Exactly. It's so very exciting.
and because I know that you're a very generous person, why don't you share some of your thoughts about why me and what other people who don't have agents yet, who don't have publishing deals, should do? Should they spend 5, 10, 20 years, a lifetime trying to get in? What are the secrets? Go ahead. Talk to us.
I have spent a lot of time trying to get in. I mean, it almost started out too easily with my first book, but then it was years after that that the second book came out, and then years again until this book came out. So my first thought is, if writing is your passion, if you really, really want to be a writer and do it, just do it for yourself. There are a lot of rejections. I mean, truly a lot of rejections. And I've gotten to the point where I understand, okay, they didn't like it. Well, let me try something different. The first couple of rejections when I first started writing really hurt. I'm thinking, well, why don't they like it? But there is a lot to learn when you're writing. There truly is. So now is the time, if you want to do it, take classes. There are a lot of free classes that you can take. So you take classes, join the SCBWI, which is a wonderful, there's so many things that you can learn from them. It's a great place to be and to hook up with different people. If there are contests, use the contests. Join a critique group. They really help. There are critique groups that are wonderful, and that's where you can learn too. And again, if you can afford to take some of the classes, definitely do that. If not, again, like I said, a lot of classes are offered for free. So take those. Oh, what else? I don't know. Just keep on going. And well, my thing is, believe in yourself and never give up. Never.
So this is this is really good advice. Never to give up. It does have a problem, and the problem is that people they have a lifespan, and you never know when it's going to happen.
Right.
But a lot of people say, well, the ones who persevere are the ones who get deals. But I have a feeling that a lot of people just fall off the map. I want to ask you one of the things that I feel strongly about, which is recognizing that no matter where you are, you can always write better.
Oh, of course, definitely. You're always learning. No matter, even if you think you know everything, there's still more to learn. And using other books as mentor texts, that's great. If you find a book that you really like and that's the way you write, look at it, see what they've done to, in the book, and you definitely, you don't copy what they've done, but you learn from what they've done, and then use your own techniques to possibly write something that might be a winner.
Okay, but you see, here's another thing you said that's very interesting to me. Write to yourself, write to your five-year-old, write to your passion. But sometimes when you do that, you end up writing about obscure subjects or in an obscure style that isn't commercially viable. A few words about that, please.
I think that you will learn. I mean, if you're getting rejections and knowing, I mean, you may not realize it's not commercially viable. You may think it's a wonderful thing and it may be obscure, and maybe you find an editor that absolutely loves it. But if you keep getting rejections and they keep coming back and saying the same thing, then you know there's something wrong, that you need to fix that and change it. And then sometimes you just have to put it away and forget it, put it in a drawer, never keep what you have, but never get rid of them, put it away. I did have an agent say to me at one point, when I went to a conference, she looked at my, what I had sent to her when we had a one-on-one, and she said, just put this away. I mean, she basically did. She said, she was telling me, this is horrible. Put this away. Never going to go anywhere. I'm going, okay. And we had 15 minutes and I'm going, okay, what do we talk about now?
What did you talk about?
Not too much. It was like, okay, can you give me something else here? But yeah.
Well, what's the process of working with Vicky? I'm saying this with a lot of positive envy. She's terrific. You're terrific. What's it like working with a wonderful agent?
She is. What I've done is she'll ask me what I'm doing, and I'll give her an idea of what I'm doing. And once I have got everything together, or I think I have, especially having all my critique groups look at it, and there's nothing more I can do on my side, then I will send it to her as a proposal. She looks at it and she'll say, okay, let's do this. And she'll send notes back. She's never said anything to me about, oh no, this is never going to work. But she has given me lots of good ideas how to improve it. So we'll go back and forth and back and forth. We'll send it out. If it's not working with editors she sent it to, she'll say, well, let's look at this again. And she does line editing, which is great, because I think that's really important to me, rather than someone just saying, well, you could do, you know, kind of not really telling you specifically. And I like, not that they should tell you exactly what to do, but, you know, you'll say, here, there's no heart to the story. Let's see if we can find some heart in, you know, to the story. Or this doesn't make sense. You need to try something different here. So we'll go back and forth that way. And with revisions, same thing. She'll say, we need to spice this up a little bit. So, you know, we'll look and we'll, the two of us will talk together too. We have one-on-one like Zoom calls that we'll talk to one another, which I love, because that helps a lot. And then we can just figure out where we're going with the manuscripts that I have and what we should do next. She is a wonderful, wonderful agent, and very kind, very kind.
That's terrific. So I two things. First of all, I'd like you to read a little bit from your wonderful book. And then if there's anything I haven't asked you, you can go ahead and ask yourself or ask me.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. You want me to read, huh?
I would love for you to read.
Okay. Well, I think I should start from the beginning.
It's the launch. Today's the day.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to call this Pew, because you know it's kind of a stinky book. And I don't know if I can go like this. Mm-hmm. Colonel Thomas S. Meacham of Sandy Creek, New York, owned acres of fertile land, woolly sheep, and 150 dairy cows. In late summer of 1835, Thomas Meacham wanted to give the President of the United States a gift to show off his talents of his farming community. A slice of an idea grew into a huge idea, a colossal idea. Cheese. Not just any cheese, but a mammoth cheese, a legendary gift made from on Thomas Meacham's property. A carpenter built a giant frame hoop and press. Thomas Meacham's cows filled pail after pail with fresh, frothy milk. The dairyman had to warm the milk, add an ingredient to curdle it, cut the curds into pieces, separate it from the liquid whey, break up the curd into smaller pieces, press out the whey, and crumble the curd. Okay, you can tell me. Otherwise,
I Sleeping Bear is going to be upset if you read the whole book. So,
okay, let me just.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is the cheese part again. This is the lined with a special cheesecloth. The enormous hoop was ready for final steps. Over 5 days, men filled the hoop with crumbled curds, added salt, and pressed out the remaining whey. But it wasn't big enough for Thomas Meacham. He added more crumbled curd until the wheel of cheese reached 4 feet in diameter, 2 feet thick, weighed 1,400 pounds, about as much as one of Meacham's dairy cows. Utterly amazing.
Utterly amazing. And so 1,400 pounds is over 600 kilograms. For people who count,
that's good, because I couldn't wouldn't be able to do that. And would like to share this with you though. I'm doing a book signing at the library, at our public library here, and it's also a fundraiser, so I can sell my books, and part of the proceeds from my books are going to go to the library. And so I'm bringing things like pencils, you know, little what we call swag pencils with a little cheese head on top, and some stickers and bookmarks. But I made a cheese, not a real cheese, but I made, because I wanted people to, or especially kids, to realize what a 1,400 pound cheese looked like, the 4 feet in diameter and the 2 feet thick. So I went out and bought felt. And I took out my sewing machine that hasn't been taken out in 20 years. And I sewed a great big cheese that is 4 feet in diameter and 2 feet thick. And it was my husband, thank goodness my husband was here. He helped me. It was hysterical trying to get things done. And then I think the longest part is I couldn't figure out how to thread the machine or put the bobbin in. It took me forever to do that because I hadn't done it in years and years. And it was a machine that I never liked to begin with. But anyway, but it last Saturday and Sunday, I made cheese, felt cheese.
No, but I mean, this is perfect, like for, you know, going to school visits and taking little pieces of cheese for the kids. And are you going to bring actual cheese to your signing?
You know, the only reason I don't is because of allergies. And I don't think the library wants food in their hands. So no. But you know, I have thought about getting, you know, the little cheeses that are wrapped up, like Edam cheese, and for another, like book signings in a bookstore where people can just grab something like that. So we'll see.
Yeah, buy two books, get a piece of cheese. So, and you're a cheese lover.
I love cheese.
It shows in your book. What kind of cheese do you love?
Well, my favorite is sharp cheddar cheese, the white sharp cheddar cheese. I really like that. But I basically will eat almost any cheese. There are some cheeses I don't like.
And do you make cheese?
I have a recipe that I'm bringing to the library with me, but I haven't made it yet. So I'm just going to, and I don't know if I'm going to have time to make it because it's next week. So no, I don't make cheese.
So we're coming towards the end of our wonderful conversation. And it's great to be with you. I mean, you know, over Zoom. On the day the book launches. And you've waited a long time for this book.
Yes.
How does it feel, Kathy? How does it feel?
It's just because it's been such a long time since the book has come out, it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And I just hope it reaches a lot of people. And I hope that people really enjoy reading it and not only learn from it, you know, the back matter you can learn from and the cheesy facts, but just really enjoy the book for what it is and kind of laugh and learn.
It's great. We don't really know much about this Colonel Meacham and what was going on in his mind when he hatched this scheme.
Well, we know that basically he was a very wealthy farmer at that time. Also, he was a showman. I mean, he made it, everything was big to him, everything. So, I mean, when they traveled with his horse, with the cheese and the carriage and the horses, he had 48 gray horses, teams, 24 teams of two horses. I mean, who does that? And who makes a cheese that big of a cheese?
The Jews would say a ganze Maschigene.
Yeah.
A total nut cake.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Okay, so now we have a food for your next book.
Okay. Next about book.
Nut cake after the red chair.
Okay.
So Kathy Ogren, this was wonderful. And now you can tell me how it felt, the interview.
Oh, well, I would say, Mel, you're a wonderful person to be interviewed by. I've enjoyed this very, very much. You are amazing. And I truly, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for having me on.
No, I thank you. This was wonderful.
Well, it's a mutual thank you party, along with a happy birthday party.
Happy book birthday party, a book that you've waited a lot of years for. And all I can say is to the public, don't wait a lot of years to get hold of this book. It's funny, it's hilarious, it's heartwarming, it's stinky in a good way.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm closing off. I'm Mel Rosenberg, the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And I've been speaking to Kathy Stefanik Ogren.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful.
It has been wonderful.
So enjoy your day. And I'll probably be speaking to you in no time.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.